And then there's one thing left to clear. It's the basement. The stairs are crickety. And, you know, I'd be surprised if they're a foot wide, that type of basement that you're going into. I was a sergeant. So I told my guys, it was two guys. I said, all right, I'll take the lead on it. You know, it's what it is. Did a hasty entry for anybody that doesn't know what that is. Kind of got to be quick to try to take, a quick peek. I'm trying to do my best to peek in the corners. On the third peek, all I see is feet that are, upright. So I said, okay, it's that coming to Jesus moment. We go down the stairs. And we're instantly hit with fluid all over the floor. He busted the heating line to the basement, and he's got the electrical panel ripped open, basically a suicide by cop scenario. But we're in such close quarters, he's armed, that we were justified to use deadly force. However, my call was, I'm scared to take the shot, not to use deadly force. And I say this openly, honestly, not because I'm John Wayne. I'm just worried about ricochet, and I'm also worried about exploding, literally, a spontaneous combustion, because I don't know what chemicals he has down there.
Hey, gang, welcome back to part two of our interview with an individual who refers to himself as Mr. Persistent and Mr. Annoying. And that's how you get things done. You thought I wasn't listening during the first part of the interview, weren't you? But you can see, ladies and gentlemen, we got Tom Rizzo back here. This dude is a hero amongst law enforcement. He's a legend. He's continuing to build that legend. He's a veteran of the U.S. Army. Hats off for service to our country, brother. And I know it didn't work out the way you wanted it to, but you still served. You stepped up. That means a whole lot right there, because so many people are not willing to step up. Tom is a 25-year veteran of law enforcement, continues as a captain with the Howell Township, New Jersey Police Department, where he's commander over the Investigations Division. And I mentioned this in the first episode, and it's so important to me that I'm going to mention it again. When you look up his write-ups, especially on LinkedIn is where I found this, the first thing he says to describe himself as he's a father of four. You got your priorities in line. When you say something like that, that's where your priorities are. Because I went back and looked at my bio, and my last sentence is, I'm married with four children. I'm thinking, I don't think I'm going to follow Tom's lead and put that on top.
Cool.
Just something to be very proud of. The guy has come up with some innovative things, and we kind of went through his law enforcement career last time. He's a graduate of the University of Central Florida, and he got his master's degree from Seton Hall, both pretty prestigious schools in my book. And we kind of went through your career and talked about some of the things that you created, even though your department is over 100 sworn officers, right? Howell Township started the crime suppression unit, which, as a recap, just tell us about that real quick, if you would.
Yeah, so we focused primarily on narcotics and violent crime apprehensions. So we did our own search warrant executions everywhere from local jurisdiction to countywide to statewide to federal cooperative, invest, FBI, DEA, Secret Service, Customs, you name it, we did it. And I would say in our free time when we weren't actually working a job, we would throw our hats in the ring of interdiction and doing that. We have interstate, we have state highways, county highways, so there's good roadways to do that.
Excellent. And I think that's considered a proactive unit, right?
Yes, sir.
So would you use a unit like that if you guys are having a series of stop and robs at the convenience stores or gas stations, whatever it might be? That's the guys you're going to call in, right?
We get called up. Yeah, we have that unique ability. And I always say any credit I ever got from being a so-called leader of the team, it was illustrative of the team effort. I was fortunate enough to be given the latitude, not without some bumps and bruises and scratches and scrapes from administrations, but to put together the team. Round pegs, round holes. We had a dog with us, so that always helps, of course. But we had that intimate connection with the street so that we knew where to go for information that would lead us down the right roads to go ahead and go get the bad guy.
And that is so important, because I know your background now from the first part of the interview, and of course our listeners do too, but you're like me. I grew up in a middle class. I didn't grow up in a crime ridden neighborhood.
No.
We lived out on the outskirts of town, and we were safe in our little neighborhood there, riding our bikes and playing with our friends and everything. And so when you become a police officer, you really don't have that background as compared to people that grow up in inner city, especially if it's a crime ridden neighborhood.
Yeah.
And you have to rely on informants, which can be some of the biggest challenges you'll ever encounter in your law enforcement career. They can be very sleazy. We don't have the luxury of recruiting priests and pastors and doctors and nurses, things like that. People who you would typically look up to in our communities, right? So it's you're dealing with people that a lot of times have spent a lot of time in jail.
Yeah.
It's a challenge, isn't it?
Yeah, but I always say, I think the best cops I've ever met, there was very slight difference, oftentimes it comes to integrity and morals, that separate cops from criminals. In terms of, we are opportunistic, right? Mm-hmm. Same way a criminal would be. Again, of course, different arenas, different goals, different intentions. But listen, and I say this all the time, I feel so bashful talking about informants to you drug investigations to you. So I have to put that out there, obviously. What am I talking about here? But for the normal folks, not people like you, your informants make you, right? They make you or they break you. And and the other thing I say with humility, I hold a few department records. I say that proudly because I want them to be broken, but I'm also very candid. Right place, right time. Yeah, you got to have the eye. Yeah, you got to have some skills for sure. But any cop that's out there that's going to tell me that luck doesn't have its play, and that comes to what? How you meet your informants as well. One of my best informants ever I met because I helped change a tire. So that's just what it is.
How about that? You never know where you're going to find them.
Nope.
I don't know if I told you during the first part of our interview, and you guys can see, we had to take a break here because Tom had a lot going on in his life and took a few weeks to get back on his schedule and my schedule as well. So I'm back home in my little man cave here. But you mentioned luck.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, I'm not a believer in luck or coincidence. I think everything happens for a reason. I think we are fortunate and blessed are the words that I like to use, but I still use the words luck, even though I say I don't believe in it, because sometimes you just can't explain the way things happen.
Okay, fair. I'll accept that.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean by that, right? I'm not talking about there's some lucky and some not. I'm just saying that I guess I kind of lose respect for folks that swear up and down that every house they've ever purchased, they knew was going to metastasize by 100% in value, you know, where it's like I say to myself, yeah, no, man, it worked out for me.
Yeah.
And I'll say the same thing on some stops that I've had, you know, where literally somebody's just annoying you going down the highway and you just want to tell them to knock it off. And all of a sudden there's a load of drugs or cash in the car. And so I'm the first one to tell you, I did not expect to do that today. So that's what I meant by it.
Absolutely. I'm with you 100%. I understand completely there. And you're exactly right when you were talking about a lot of cops, including me, you know, we have that thin blue line. We call it a thin blue line because we could have gone one side or the other on that line. When I was a young boy, I was going the wrong side of that line and got straightened up.
But, I talk about that openly. There was a little intimate group of us coming up, and it's right when you say down the middle, there's three of us that became cops and two of us that became felons. So I share that. And you know what? I love those guys on both sides of the fence all the same. Different life choices, different consequences of those decisions. But I live and breathe by the mantra that I'm not above anybody, though.
Absolutely. Actually, we call ourselves cops, but the true title is public servant.
That's a fact.
And, you know, a lot of people look at that, especially corporate executives look at that as a derogatory term. I don't. I look at that as a badge of honor.
That's a fact.
Any man that willingly chooses to serve his fellow man, there's no higher calling out there. So just my book, All Public Servants Are Heroes. And I don't care if you're the police, the firemen, or the trash collectors. Because how ticked off do we get when they don't come and pick up our trash?
Yep.
They're just as important as anybody else. So, you know, we have no right to downgrade anybody because they're serving their fellow man. I love it. It's just you guys, all you guys are heroes in my life. I want to ask you a few questions here about things that you've been involved with. And I haven't told Tom what we're going to talk about today. So I'm surprising him as much as it's surprising you. Although if you're a regular listener, you hear these questions quite often. So in 25 years, you've seen a lot of stuff. What's the most dangerous event that, in your opinion, that you ever participated in your law enforcement career?
So I guess I have a hybrid answer to that. One was, if you could picture a street, where I work is a very unique area. There's everything from projects to trailer parks to million-dollar homes and everything in between. And we got this call of a disturbance of some sort, possibly domestic. And I can remember vividly, there's an older gentleman walking in like a bathrobe, distraught. And he just says, he's in the house. He lost his mind. We know the house. We're familiar with the house. We're familiar with the subject who lives there. You know, several time convicted felon, drug addict, deranged. He's a handful. So as soon as we see there's something odd with the house, we go ahead and make entry. The stove, all four burners are on. There's a unique smell. And we're like, we don't know what the deal is. And that's when we hear from outside, oh, now a female screaming, he's trying to blow up the house. But we know he's in there, but it's too late. We're in. So now it's okay. It's a point of no return. As we're trying to shut utilities, we clear the house. There's no sign of this guy. And then there's one thing left to clear. It's the basement. The stairs are crickety. And, you know, I'd be surprised if they're a foot wide, that type of basement that you're going into. I was a sergeant. So I told my guys, it was two guys. I said, all right, I'll take the lead on it. You know, it's what it is. Did a hasty entry for anybody that doesn't know what that is. Kind of got to be quick to try to take a, you know, a quick peek. I'm trying to do my best to peek in the corners. On the third peek, all I see is feet that are, you know, upright. So I said, okay, it's that coming to Jesus moment. We go down the stairs and we're instantly hit with fluid all over the floor. He busted the heating line to the basement and he's got the electrical panel ripped open, basically a suicide by cop scenario. But we're in such close quarters, he's armed, that we were justified to use deadly force. However, my call was, I'm scared to take the shot and not to use deadly force. And I say this openly, honestly, not because I'm John Wayne. I'm just worried about ricochet, and I'm also worried about exploding, literally spontaneous combustion, because I don't know what chemicals he has down there. So we had to do a distraction technique to get his, you know, to look off to the side and then just do a quick tackle and get him into custody. But that was that moment of that, you know, you can't really ever prepare for. It's one thing to think that you're prepared to take somebody's life. We don't ever want to do it. And I say this wherever I go throughout the country, I was totally prepared to do that. And I don't say that as a false facade of some type of exterior armor, like, look at me. Right. I was just like, what was funny, and I don't mean that comedically, ironically, I said to my guys, I said, I just don't want to blow us up. I mean, that's really the truth here. The ricochet might even hurt a bit, but I'm thinking about blowing us up. The other one that I laugh at, combat vet, one of my best guys, he's battle tested. He was in Ramadi, Iraq. This guy is cut from the same cloth as me and much better. He's a better human, a better man. I love this man. He's the guy you want to go through a door with. We go to an ambulance that's overturned, carrying a patient, overturned through power lines, and the power lines are this close. So the ambulance is no longer grounded because obviously the tires are upside down. And we hear them screaming inside the ambulance. So like Thelma and Louise, there's like a ditch. He's holding me by my belt as I'm trying to get the people out of the ambulance. And we're literally, I turned back and I was like, and we're both best friends. I said, man, if I get zapped, you get zapped. We both die here. And the people are inside the ambulance screaming at us, get us out of here. We're like, we're trying. But both of us, we're daring each other. Who's going to be the one? And literally, you see these two, we try to be like, oh, look at us. We're badasses. Holding each other by the belts, like looking like two little school-aged kids hugging each other, saying, you do it. No, you do it. And you know this, Steve. You're involved in things that you don't realize what it is that you're doing at the moment that you're doing it.
Right.
And then when that moment's over, every once in a while, we exhale and say, man, that was kind of a crazy one. And I don't ever think we come to terms with how close it is that we came.
I know people that are listening to this right now, they're thinking, what the hell is he laughing about? He's about to electrocute himself. And we're just laughing like somebody told a good joke.
It's funny. Yeah. You know,
a defense mechanism, right?
Oh, that's a fact. Yeah.
There's probably numerous times in any cop's life that's had any time on the job, that's been involved in numerous calls of unimaginable things that react to the situation. And afterwards they sit back and thinking, what was I thinking there? What? That was stupid.
Yes.
But whether it's the grace of God or whatever, I mean, you come out alive and you just keep moving forward.
Yeah, but you said that very well. And that's what I take very seriously at this point in my career. And you know, I will give myself credit for that even years ago now. And people often look at me cross-eyed when I say this. My biggest talent is admitting my shortcomings and my flaws. It's not because I believe in being self-deprecating. I just think that I wish more veteran cops would do that to the younger generation instead of, oh, I had to go through it. You go through it. Yeah, that's cool. There are some things where you got to earn your stripes.
Yeah.
But then there's some other things where I think we could avoid each other from getting hurt, getting depressed, having mental health episodes if we would share in some of those. So for me now, I say, okay, we can have a chuckle about that experience, but now we should sit down and actually break it down and debrief it and say, I just want you to realize how close it is that we came on that one and how we could avoid that next time.
Yeah. And we both, I'm going to guess that you've been in this, but I have where you have superiors, and I don't call them leaders because they were just outranking me, that you question the situation. And especially, like, I'm thinking specifically if you're trying to take care of the people that work for you.
Yeah.
And that superior says, well, it took me this long to reach this rank. What do you think my priority is? You think I'm going to help these guys I don't even know? Well, that's not leadership whatsoever. But what leadership is, and you alluded to it, when you went in that basement, you're the ranking officer as a sergeant. You have your two patrolmen with you. And who went first?
I did.
That's called leadership.
Yeah, I have to. And I've practiced that. What's funny about me is I'm the one who fantasized about doing this type of stuff that you did. And I never wanted to get promoted. I wanted to do narcotics for me. And I believe there's certain cops that have that in their DNA. There's some that I think choose to learn it, but then there's other ones that there's just something about that code of cop that's what you see. I don't care if you're small level. I don't care if you're medium level. I don't care if you're advanced level. And then you could roll your eyes all you want. And then there's those that belong on the Mount Rushmore level, right? So I always considered myself smaller to medium. That's all I ever did. I'm friends with, now I'm sitting here talking to you, I'm friends with guys and girls that did stuff that I fantasized about. Now, with that said, I just always believed in, though, that, you know, I never wanted to get promoted. The only reason why I promoted is because I looked for folks to lead me.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not going to lead me, I believe in a Patton quote, lead me, follow me, or just get out of my way.
Yep.
So that's it, man.
Yep. Most good leaders, and I'm certainly not saying I'm a good leader. I was a leader. I probably was not nearly close to even being one of the best leaders. But I took the position that if I'm in charge, I have different responsibilities than what you have.
Yeah.
And I'm specifically talking about DEA, especially when you get up to the special agent charge level.
Yeah.
My job is to get you what you need to do your job.
That's a fact.
And you're going to know much more about your job than I do. But I think that's just what makes a good leader. That's one of the things. There's a lot of things that go in there. But the fact that you're going into a life or death situation, which you did repeatedly in 25 years, and you're leading your troops down there. And just think about this for those of you out there. How much respect would you have for somebody that's willing to do that?
Yeah.
And that's what we're talking about. And from respect comes loyalty.
Yes.
And when you've got loyalty, then you've got a tight-knit group of individuals that can conquer almost anything.
Yep.
I love it. This is very motivational. And I got to tell you, too, you said something about self-deprecating. You're doing that right now. You've done some fantastic things, but you're talking about fantastic things that other people did.
Yeah. But that's what we should do, right?
Yes.
I think that you focusing on yourself to be 100% is great. I know that's what society calls for, but I've tweaked it in the past couple of years to look at it as, what if instead I take 100 people and I impact them to be better by 1%? You see, the sum is still 100 at the end of the day, but I believe the latter two of those examples is how you start a movement. So I think at this point, me at 100%, yeah, that's cool. And I got a couple plaques and a couple ribbons to say so. That's great, but that's not what leaves an impact. What leaves an impact is if I can effectuate some impact and some change on 100 people, even a little bit, minuscule, 1%. That's how I want to be remembered.
That's a great way to look at it, brother. And in doing so, you're also instilling confidence. You're building their confidence so that they're going to be better people.
Yeah.
When you're the cop out there in uniform, and I refer to uniforms as the real cops.
Sure.
Because while they want to do things proactively, basically, if you're working a beat, you're being reactive.
Yeah.
You have to be. That's right. And so for them to continue, you got to have that confidence.
Yeah.
People, when they're in need, they're looking for somebody to come in and take an authoritative position. And that doesn't mean come in and run roughshod over everybody.
No.
But somebody has to come in and take command of that situation to try to bring resolution, to try to bring comfort to the victims.
Yeah.
To settle the community down. Hey, you're safe. We've got this under control. Wow. I'm starting to pontificate here a lot already.
Yeah, but you're making a lot of sense. You said before how, you know, the cops are the heroes. I often say the same. I've been so fortunate that working specialized, to me, I think the most underrated job in our industry is deputy patrol level uniformed officers that are still proactive in their valleys. You know, everybody has peaks and valleys, but in their valleys and their lulls of calls for service. But man, oh man, oh man, anybody who wants to argue with me, I'll go toe to toe with anybody who wants to argue. The job is a hell of a lot harder today than it was when I first started. I hate using that phrase, but when I first started. So
right.
The difficulty, what they're expected to know, the decisions they're expected to make, knowing that they're being filmed from 14 directions, knowing that if they sneeze and there's a boogie showing in their nose, they're looking at their license to be revoked. I mean, anybody who wants to argue that. So me, I'm fortunate, man. I got to come up to polish a skill set into some, and I'll say argumentatively, an expertise, and then hone and focus in on that, and then get like minds and like personalities in a group. I mean, you talk about it, it's like, I didn't consider that work.
Yeah.
What, are you kidding me? I mean, that's a dream. I didn't have to worry about the neighbor dispute. I didn't have to worry about the alarm going off. It's just, I get to do what I want, when I want. And nobody's questioning you because you're putting asses in the seats, right?
Yep. Absolutely.
But difficulty? I mean, I'll argue that all day the week. Line level, uniformed, patrol, deputies, and those first line supervisors. My heart and my head gives them nothing but respect.
Yep. That's the front line. That's the front line right there. Man, I was hoping I was going to be able to get you to come out of your shell a little bit today.
So, hey, I warned you, man. It comes with a disclaimer.
Well, and the reason I said that is because if you guys haven't figured it out yet, that's a man that I would follow into battle. I would go through a door with him right there. Because yeah. That's a guy that's confident in himself, confident in doing the right thing. And there's no holding back.
Nope.
You want to be like that.
Yeah, why?
And you did develop an expertise. A lot of it has to do with your personality, but that personality comes from confidence. It comes from experience. In my opinion, you're right where you're supposed to be.
We're not
talking about just your department. You got a lot of other irons in the fires that we're going to talk about here in a few minutes.
Yeah.
You're all good stuff, brother.
Thank you.
Thanks for sharing those stories.
I mean,
there are so many learning points in there, especially, you know, I'm pretty sure we've got a pretty large law enforcement and military following here on the Game of Crimes. But so the next question for you is, and it's throughout your career, what is the most memorable case? What is it that you're, I guess, I don't want to say the biggest case, but maybe the one that you're proudest of in your career?
I got to give you another hybrid. The one I think proudest is just recently, and I wasn't the lead investigator on it, but I gave all the support, like you said, as a leader to my guy to fly out of state, to do everything that we could do. Every technological piece of equipment that we had, we just went everything. Let's put all our chips in. A boyfriend to the biological mother was sexually abusing a 12-year-old disabled girl. Mm-hmm. And they had cameras inside the home that I don't even know what to call them, to be careful. But crimes against women and crimes against children, if you want to see my blood pressure go, that's the ones. This animal thought that he destroyed any type of memory on the footage, but turned out that we had some pretty cool technological means to recover it. And there he is on video footage abusing this 12-year-old. And we just recently got word he was just sentenced to 41 and a half years in prison, which will be a life sentence given his age. So you talk about proud. Ironically, it came in my 20s. Memorable, though, I think would be what I was telling you before, and I'll use the L word, luck. I see a car catches my attention, and what catches my attention is the driver's reaction to my presence. I know you've heard that cliche phrase used before, but it was just different than any other car. So, okay, let me take a look at you. I get three different easy equipment violations and a moving violation to put him on the side of the road. He's got some signs that he's showing to me that he's a user, not any type of distribution level offender, but I know I'm pretty positive that I have what I need here. I got some paraphernalia right in plain view. It gives me probable cause to search the car. I reach under a seat and there's something really that's like squared off but hard, and I pull it out. And it's hundreds of stacks of $100 bills that are all packaged. And I know this guy's not a money courier, so something's not right. But he won't talk. So come in, and it's a load of cash, a record level seizure from my department. We're in there. The money counters are out. The evidence technician's counting up the money. I literally watch a patrolman walk by and go, I believe this report I got to go take. And I just hear from another room, yeah, this guy's trying to say that somebody broke into his house, but there's no sign of forced entry and took hundreds of thousands of dollars in cash. Yeah, right. People just insurance scam. So all of a sudden, like, I'm hardly paying attention. I'm just like, wait a minute. So I peek out. I said, where's that at that you got to go? And he explains the road. So if you picture State Highway Route 9 is this way, Holst's Road is this way, and he's got to go on Holst's Road, which is where this is. I stopped the guy going like this on the route. So I turn around. You can see the color drop out of my face. I said, go tell that person I have their money. What happened was, just by virtue of, maybe it was my guardian angel, my mother looking down on me, I don't know. Something told me to turn my head to this car. I got this knucklehead leaving the scene of a burglary where he took these people just got married. They had their savings. They had all the gifts from their wedding to then go buy a home. They were about to go on their honeymoon. That's why they had all the cash in the house. And wow. This guy must have heard it from somewhere that that's what they were doing, broke into the home and took their cash. And I got them at the intersection.
Unbelievable.
No report of the burglary. The report of burglary came 3 hours after this. I'm at headquarters. This guy's in a lockup and we're doing the evidence.
Gosh. Did that guy have a prior rap sheet?
Yeah.
For burglary? Wow. So to that newlywed couple, you guys are like rock stars now.
The guy owned a tattoo shop. He was like, any tattoo you want, man, anything I can do. There was food getting delivered to the police department. I said, look, it's cool, man. I said, it's totally cool. This is what we do. I tried to portray like, this is what we do, this and that. And then one time I saw him at a restaurant. I said, man, I got to be honest with you. I said, I had no idea. And I believed the patrolman at first that this was a BS report that some homeowners filed. Like, you know what I mean? I was perfectly candid with him, but it was wild.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Your episodes are out now. And 2 weeks earlier, we had Kenny Williams on here.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm talking to him about interdiction. And this is where your experience and expertise comes in. And he's saying you can't profile. That's, you know, it's taboo now.
Nope.
But you look for human indicators.
Yes.
And I said, so explain that to me and the listeners, because I never worked interdiction. I mean, yeah. I went out with some troopers in different places, but they're the pros. I'm just riding along trying to learn what they do.
Yeah.
And Kenny spent some time talking about, you know, you can just see these crappy cars or whatever, but there's just one. Every once in a while, one comes out that just like, that's it.
Gotta that's go. It.
And I've talked to Justin Klitsch, who's a trooper out in Idaho, about the same thing.
Another one. Yeah, stud.
Have you seen his pit video?
It's wild. It's wild. But for me, working in Jersey, that's Disney World stuff, man. That doesn't, that's make believe.
It is to most agencies, most jurisdictions, because he sent me that, man, and I got so excited. It's funny because last night, I've got five granddaughters, and one of them called us late last night, and she was with her daddy, and he said, okay, before you go to bed, what do you want to do? And she said, I want you to watch some videos, and she's 8 years old. Yeah. So he said, what do you want to watch? He said, I want to watch pit maneuvers.
That's great. I love it.
How many eight-year-olds know what a pit is?
Well, now it's becoming mainstream, yeah.
It is. And so I told her daddy, Josh, I said, listen, I'm going to text you this link and put it up on YouTube. And he did. And it was Justin out there pitting that guy. I mean, he pits him and then he hits the gas and rolls him over.
It's insane. It's insane.
Here I am acting like a little kid at my age.
Me too.
I still get excited about things like
me
that.
Me too. Yeah.
And if our listeners haven't watched it, just Google or pull up on YouTube, Idaho State Trooper Pit, P-I-T.
It's wild.
It's unbelievable. Shots fired, guy wanted for murder. And at the end, you can say, show me, you know, you hear the cop, show me your hands. And you see these two hands just creep up over the
little gator arms at that point. Yeah, of course.
Oh, it's all good stuff. I love talking to you because I've edited your first half. And my wife, she's a saint, man. She's been doing all my editing to free me up. But because we had a break in your first episode in this interview, I went back and listened. I thought, well, heck, if I'm going to listen to it, let me just edit it while I'm doing it. And she would come in and she's like, what are you laughing at? I said, it's Rizzo on the screen here. She, you know, she doesn't know who you are yet, but she'll be editing this episode here. She'll learn. But my goodness, it's like being a little kid again. It's just like
I get cops together. Well, I see it from being on the show and I see these boys in the South, and they got their bosses are supportive of it. Oh yeah, absolutely. We replace cars. That's fine, but we want that guy put on the side of the road and quick. And I'm like, I'm saying, man, I'm not. Maybe I'm still young enough. I could apply or something like that. Let me just do it for a month.
Just go have some fun.
That's it.
Lordy, let me calm down a little bit. I'm getting sweaty here from talking and laughing so much.
Yeah.
And one more question for you, and you might have already answered it, but in your career, what's the case that you work that you're most proud of? And I'm not asking you to toot your own horn, but sometimes it just comes with what you do.
Yeah. I would go back to, like I said, you know, those two, when you talk about proud, because it's like a culmination of the effort. But I think on the other side of it, you know, working to bring successful closure to people when they don't think it's possible. For me, it's a combination. It gets blended almost into like a salad of different ingredients. And what I mean by that is different people in different places. So it could be we received tri-state notoriety. We were the first in the area. And that's how we really started to put ourselves on the map to take strict liability homicide very serious. And for your listeners that aren't familiar, we here in New Jersey, it's called strict liability. Other states coin it as something different, but you being the distributor of the fatal dose of the narcotics that killed somebody. So when we got good at what we do, we became very aggressive in terms of going after the distributors of the fatal doses. When heroin hit its epidemic levels in New Jersey, we were legitimately a go-to. And it's very humbling to think as a municipal agency, when you have county, state, and feds coming to you saying, hey, could you help us with this? Hey, can you put together a plan? Like, so, and as a leader of those guys, I mean, you talk about having a sparkle in your eye or a feather in your cap. But again, I made it very clear. Hey, listen, that's the guy to go to for that. That's the guy to go to for that. Mm-hmm. I have a couple of things in my, you know, arsenal, but these are the guys for this job. So I would say the impact we had on families that were suffering, because I believe that addiction is like cancer. I think when one person in a house is an addict, I think the whole house becomes addicted. And I've seen families be torn apart. I have intimate connections personally to addiction. So for me, it was matching a passion to a purpose. Mm-hmm. We saw the effects of our passion meeting purpose in terms of being on the other end of a phone and hearing a distributor say, I'm not coming there. You know, they knew better. I could tell you that we had a billboard on the state highway that said, come here and you're going to get taxed. So I would say I don't have an individual case. And I say this with humility, especially to who I'm talking to. They're blended for me because each one of them was the proudest moment to those people to see the successful closure of cases that up until that point, we were just pawning off as to, hey, sorry, we can't do anything about this.
Yeah. Hats off too to those, regardless whether state, other locals or feds, that recognize you have the expertise that they don't. They have an opportunity to learn.
Yeah.
And they can put their ego aside.
Yeah.
Because you know as well as I do, we have a ton of type A's in law enforcement.
Oh, yeah.
And there's so many that, especially once they start making rank, think all of a sudden they're God's gift to law enforcement.
No, for that, I would bring DEA and FBI guys in the same room. Everybody knew when Tom was involved, he's going to be that, like New York Italian. He's going to bring something to eat. He's going to bring, you know, some type of coffee and he's going to make us sit down. It would look like, you know, crime families sitting down from a... But they knew if I was involved, there's not going to be fighting. I mean, I don't care, man. Everybody's got their specialty. Everybody, right. And I always did it with people would ask me, how do you get away with saying the things that you say? And I think it's because people could see genuinely where I'm coming from.
Yeah. It's all for the right reasons.
Yeah.
It's not about self-promotion. It's not about patting myself on the back. No. Let's get this job done.
Yeah.
And what happens, obviously, when they don't work together, who wins? The criminals.
Yeah.
And let's see, we said we're public servants. So how did we serve the public today by being little bitches and complaining about
it? I can't stand
usually
it.
Usually something silly.
Yeah. Yeah.
That does bring back memories and they're not good memories.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I love it. I love everything that you're saying. I love what you represent there, brother. You are one of those that represent all of us, the best of us.
I try.
So I appreciate the comments that you make about me. I worked one case that got blown out of proportion by a show on Netflix.
Okay. And,
but you know what it's done? It's given me a platform.
Yeah.
And it's given me a platform to bring people like you on here so that the world can see this. That's the whole purpose of this show.
Yeah.
Is to show the world the bravery, the commitment, the perseverance, the dedication to duty, all those things that are required to be a successful law enforcement professional.
Well, it's funny you say that. People, I think, that don't know me might not know this. I never thought it would come to fruition getting the job for being a co-host on the show, On Patrol Live. And I said, for me, that's in my wheelhouse. And the reason why is because I love the opportunity to speak on what it is that we do and why it is that we do it. Yeah. Because anybody who knows me knows I am ultra critical of leadership in our sector that fail to do that. It doesn't mean I'm better than them. I never say that. God knows I beat the hell out of myself. But man, oh man, oh man, I beg guys and girls out there in leadership positions to just get better at talking about what it is we do and why it is that we do it. And maybe, just maybe, it would mute some of those opposition voices that are coming out in places that from positions of ignorance. So that's my position on that.
And you hit the nail on the head there when you said, get out and talk. If you're a leader, your people have to know what it is you expect. So you got to set the goals, and then you got to give them the tools to do their job, and then you got to give them the latitude to do their job.
That's a fact.
Some of these things are just so common sense to me, to you, but man, it's not to most people.
Nope.
Yeah. So, and I want to ask you too. So everybody, if you don't know, Tom is a co-host on Patrol Live. I think you kind of got a permanent position there now, right?
Yeah. So it was Live PD and originally on A&E. It was relaunched after Fox canceled Cops. A&E no longer aired Live PD. That was during the wonderful defund era. So it was relaunched on Reels as On Patrol Live. And I was so fortunate. I got this, they reached out on LinkedIn. It was like just a feeler. They said that we're going to be doing these with hundreds of people where it's a Zoom interview, it's recorded. So I teased them during the interview because I'm thinking to myself, there's no way this is getting any further than this. So I held a poker face and I gave them some silly answers. And then all of a sudden they could see what chuckle happened. I think they could realize I was being silly. I was invited into the studio to do a chemistry test. And ironically, you say about my profile on LinkedIn, I was the first one to go. It went well. I thought, I had a good feeling it went well. And they said, okay, we really think you should stick around. You might want to stick around. Wink, wink. I said, yeah, no, my daughter asked me to take her to the movies. And they were like, no, no, no. We're saying you should really stick around. And I was like,
you're saying no, no, no.
Yeah, no, no. My baby girl asked me to take her to the movies. So I'm, yeah. And I'm thinking again, like, it's just nothing's going to come of this. So then when I got the call in December of 23 to come and do an episode, same thing. This is crazy. I'm going to be on the show now. So I brought these custom-made pastries. I'm Italian and from New York, so just forgive me.
I
had these custom-made pastries, and they said, what the hell is this? I said, well, my mother always taught me that always leave a sweet impression on those that you meet and pretend as if it's the last time you'll ever see them. I said, depending on how this goes tonight, like, I don't know. So I said, I just want you guys to remember me. And one thing led to another. And I have to say, for your listeners and your viewers, Sean Larkin Sticks was who I officially replaced. And you talk about, number one, a guy that has earned his reputation. He worked in Tulsa. And I'll tell you that, you know, where I work is not like that. Mm-hmm. Okay. This is a guy, street guy. And I mean, so you talk about a guy that had my respect over the DNA. Yep. And there's a DNA match. We hit it off, right? And I'm like, this dude is a stud. And what a big brother. Nothing but courteous and friendly. And hey, let me help you. So you talk about making you feel like this is like a home away from home. And the staff. And Steve, I was there for not even a year. And they did this big thing for my birthday. Wow. And I'm like, man, I've been with my department 24 years, and it's like, yeah, whatever, man. Like, so a dream come true.
Oh, that's fantastic. I mean, and you're going to continue with that. So the reason, though, I ask you that question is, have you noticed any jealousy in your agency because of that?
It's bizarre. My agency specifically just won't even talk about it. So, which is bizarre, because you talk about a recruitment tool, but you know what? That's the purpose of why I wrote my book. That's the purpose of why before the show, I was coast to coast speaking. I'm a trauma dog. I'm a trauma pet. And I came from an environment that I allowed to ruin relationships. And I say I allowed because I'm a big boy. And that is one thing. If the public only knew how inside the four walls of a building, we all wear these fancy shirts that say, I have your six, I watch my six, and all this good stuff. And I say this candidly, there is not a criminal element in this world that I'd be afraid to go after. I know my wires are twisted. I like that. I get an adrenaline rush. What has caused me stress and anxiety that I cannot even come close to matching has been what I've experienced inside the walls of the building. That's the nature of what it is that we do. We pretend as if I hit you in the kneecap for trying to get on that show. And the irony is, me personally, anybody who knows me, I will give you every tip and trick that I have. I will tell you every mistake I've made. If you want to write a book, if you want to speak, I'll tell you everything. And then I'll also be very honest with you and say, I don't know how that happened. I don't know why they chose me. So, yeah, jealousy, I don't say those words. I don't know what it is, though. I find it bizarre, though, because I just know for me, if you mentioned Kenny, Kenny is one of the best interdiction guys in the country. And I see some of the stuff he does, and I'm the first person to say, man, that is badass.
Yeah.
I don't sit there and say, well, must be not. Like, I just find it weird, man. I think that that's a reflection of them suffering some belly cancer on their own.
I'm looking at my notes over on the screen, and I just realized, I didn't listen to it, but I saw you were interviewed on his podcast, Beyond the Barrel.
Yeah.
You folks heard me talk about it earlier, but if you haven't listened to that podcast, go over and check Kenny out. It's Beyond the Barrel podcast. And when he said barrel, I thought he was talking about a rifle, but then when you look at his logo, it's a big, like, whiskey barrel.
Yeah.
With a rifle propped up.
Yeah.
You got to love that, right? And it's funny because last week's guest was a cop in Australia. How many years was it? 20? No, 30? I can't remember now. Gary, and he was a homicide investigator for a number of those years.
Yeah.
And some show came along in Australia, asked him to be the face of the show. New South Wales police agreed to it. Jealousy set in. They ended up charging him. Well, you know what? I don't want to waste the time on that. Go back and listen to Gary Jubelin's interview. That was episode 198, which was just last week's episode. So it's amazing. He ended up getting charged. They put a bolo out on him. He's a chief detective inspector in a 15,000-man agency, and they put a be on the lookout. They put out a capture. You got to listen to it. And it comes down to nothing more than jealousy.
100%.
That's a shame. That is a shame. All right. Now I want to toot Tom's praises here just a second, because since our last interview, which we did in early April, and we're doing this on May 2nd, he has been recognized. And just tell us what you got recognized for. This is pretty big.
It was wild. In the fall, I was told that I was nominated for the National Law Enforcement Officer Hall of Fame. And again, just like with the show, I'm like, wow, I got nominated. So for me, box checked of a dream come true. I don't care what comes of it. I knew it was very select because since 2016, they had only inducted 44 people. So there was a battery of backgrounds and all that. So again, I'm thinking nothing's coming from it. And right around the holidays, which was a very emotional time for me. It's the first holidays that I spent, being, divorced and away from my children. I took them to Disney, of all places, is where they wanted to go. And while we're in Disney, I get the phone call that I had made it and I was going to be inducted under the category for the Founders Award, which is your service as a police officer and your service off duty for what you do for the community. And I was just flabbergasted. I was like, this is insane. I don't understand. So they had this big gala in Fort Worth on April 11th that I attended. And I got to have my family there to witness it. And for me, that was surreal because I always will have that asterisk in my mind of I set out when I started to get promoted up the ranks that I did have the goal to reach the chief of police level. Didn't happen. So for this to happen at this point in my career as my window's closing was surreal. And the fact I was able to get to share that with my family was even more surreal. One of the members of my original crime suppression unit, he's retired. He lives in Florida. I flew over to Texas to be there. A couple of the boys from Hayes in Arkansas from the TV show flew over to be there. I mean, You talk about crazy. My sister, who I rekindled a relationship with, my father, even my ex-wife and my ex-in-laws, because I felt like anybody who had been there as part of my journey deserved to share in the moment. So it was surreal.
Wow. And so I'm telling you guys right now, and I'm going to give you his social media sites here soon, but on Instagram, you can find Tom at TomRizzo70. And I don't know, what's the 70 got to do? What's that about?
70 Chevelle. That was my first car. And that's a part of my soul.
But before we started recording, I went and looked it up to see what I could see on there, if there was any videos. You got to watch it. And I'm going to tell you, you might want to have a tissue on hand because they posted it. You can tell somebody's recording it from a streaming on a laptop.
Yeah.
But his son and his daughter get up and they get to present the award to him. I'm like, oh my gosh, talk about striking at the heartstrings. I mean, that was just, I tell you what, the older I get, the more sentimental and emotional I get. If I sit here and talk about it too long, I'll start tearing up all over again. But, and I told him when we came on here to record today's episode that I can't think of a better way to be recognized than to have your own family stand up and talk about how proud they are of you, not only as a police officer and all your accomplishments there, but as their dad. And you can tell there's a lot of pride in these children of their father there. So check it out. Go look at the video. I think you'll like it. Let's see what else. One other question here for you. You told us last time, you told us this time too, that you might be coming towards the end of your law enforcement career here.
Yeah.
Which I think is a detriment to the citizens that you serve. And that's my personal opinion. But I mean, what do you envision for your future? If you give up law enforcement, that's what we are. That's not a 9-to-5 job. That's a lifestyle that we embrace.
Yeah.
And you always worry, what's going to happen after I leave this? I never wanted to leave law enforcement. It kind of worked out because of the Narcos thing. But what do you envision for Tom Rizzo? And I call it life after law enforcement.
You know, and I think anybody that's at that point will relate to this. I'm scared. And what scares me isn't the unknown. What scares me is making sure that, again, my passion meets purpose. Like right now, it is just innate that I go to work, I see, I do, and that's all I know. Mm-hmm. So I think to have that transition of mentality that I would no longer be in a position that I have to now be almost like an observant citizen, always there to help. If I saw a police officer in distress, that'll never leave me. Yeah. I say that often, you know, my brain says go, but my body says no. Things are starting to break down on me, but
just wait.
I don't know. And what will ultimately make my decision, I haven't filed my retirement yet, but what will ultimately make my decision as to whether I press that button or don't will be the circumstances surrounding me. Law enforcement is something that I don't think will ever leave me, mm-hmm. but the circumstances, I think when I feel as if the circumstances contribute more to a detriment than they do to a nutrient is mm-hmm. when I know that it's time for me to step away. And again, as you could relate, I'm sure in your experience that you've seen, that comes down to a concoction of, you know, organizational betrayals, political infiltration, like I've earned the right that I don't have to be a part of something like that if I don't want to be. So that's what would make that decision. I can't rule out that maybe I would look for a position in another organization. That started to happen at my 20-year mark where I was getting avidly recruited. Hey, would you be interested in coming over to here and taking this job and as a leadership role in this department, this agency? I will never make another decision again while my kids are of age without consulting with them first, as I did for the television show, because that's Friday and Saturday nights. And so anything I do now, career objective wise, unlike in the past, and I practice what I preach now to others, I consult with them.
Outstanding. That's a great answer. I mean, you've already got 1,000 irons in the fire, or let's say 100 irons in the fire. You're still teaching.
Yes, sir.
And we're talking about at the college level. You're doing keynote speaking. You're an author. I don't know if you have plans for more books.
Yes, I do.
You're on a TV show. You're a trainer in the law enforcement community. You've got, let's see, I lost your companies here that I wanted to ask you about on your website. Well, this is what you call Murph's Law when you're looking for something and you can't find it. Well, I mentioned books. Do you have plans for another book?
I do. I'll give you a little hint. It'll be something having to do with the travels of so many people see us as just almond flavor, that police are police and that's all we do. Where yeah. I would submit, as we were just talking about before, maneuvers, right? I would like people to realize the true definition of diversity is having the same type of heart, but different types of bodies. And I would love to be insightful and then share with the country the different ways we police. I mentioned a reference in my first book, Kapikaze, that I say this all the time. I'm friends with a deputy in Texas. And I say, up here in New Jersey, Friday night during football season, if you encountered the high school football coach, that's a normal call. If you delayed the high school football coach in his area in Texas from getting to the game on Friday night, I mean, I think the town folk would burn your house down.
Oh, yeah.
So now we're the same, right? A speeding violation is a speeding violation. And all we do is the same. Now, according to, because that's what the media has done, right? We're all the same. You wear a badge and a gun. We're all the same. All yeah. we want to do is do this. And so just like I've made it as part of my DNA and my fabric is to get the truth out there as to so many different, not everything is positive. I don't always say that, but I would love to be insightful. Everything I do now is peeling back the cloak and getting people to see a lot of who we are as people and what it is that we truly intend to do.
That's a lot of it. Self-revelation.
Yeah.
I love it. And I found my note. It's right there in front of my eyes. I highlighted it in yellow now so I can pick it out. Tell us, what is Walk the Talk Consultants?
So that was the company I created when I started to do a lot of the outside of New Jersey, when I started to go around teaching and lecturing. And then I started to do consulting. Like, I work with a major biotech in California, and I help as they're about to market a drug. They'll bring in a leadership team. They'll bring from all over the world. They'll put leaders in a room, but they don't know how to deal with dynamic situations and break down problems and resolution strategies. Mm-hmm. So I match the cop world to the corporate world, and I enjoy the hell out of it because it's just a different venue. It's what we do. Mm-hmm. So like they like to hear it in this day. People are fascinated about police in general as to what we do, but we could use some of our experiences from a high stress situation or a dynamic situation, and you could apply it to a boardroom and people find value in that. So I started to do that as well and bring it to the corporate sector, whether it's consulting, keynote, you know, speeches at when they come together for a symposium. And I love it. I absolutely love doing that because, you know, the toughest room is a room full of cops.
You can't get them to laugh sometimes.
My goodness.
It's funny that you mentioned that because my oldest son is an orthopedic surgeon. He's a spinal surgeon at Children's Hospital of Atlanta.
Yeah.
And last year they had a spinal surgery conference out in Phoenix.
Yeah.
And each year they bring in one speaker. Has nothing to do with the medical field. You get 15 minutes to do a little presentation. And so I showed them a few slides about Escobar. And I mean, you're talking to these people that have lives in their hands every day.
Yep.
And they're just sitting on the edges of their seat. And so at the end, I said, so of all the things we talked about, why is there a cop up here talking to you? Well, let's look at it from a different perspective. Are you guys leaders? Do you guys make decisions under critical circumstances? Are you involved in teamwork? And so you just expound on those and try to do this in 15 minutes. And then that night and all the next day, everybody I encountered has said, you've got to come back. You got to come back. We want to hear the whole story. You got to tell us more about leadership. And it just so happens that their next conference is in Nice, France this year.
Oh, well.
So I'm waiting on an invitation.
You got to go. I'll tell you that right. I could see you with a beret on and everything. I mean, you'd be all right.
You won't see that. I promise you won't see that. This has been so good, man.
Hey, listen, if you need somebody to come with you, I'm just thinking just for security, whatever it is. I just think it's always good to have somebody offer you a different perspective. I would take that sacrifice.
You take one for the team. Taking one for the team. That's what that is.
Man, I would do that for you, just so you know.
I love you, brother. Okay, last question. And then we'll finish this thing up. You have any words of advice or wisdom that you would offer to people, especially those that are considering a career in law enforcement?
Yeah, very good question. It would be, do not lose your sense of your personal identity for the sacrifice of assuming a professional camouflage. And I don't mean to sound all sorts of philosophical, but I always say this, and some leaders will be very critical of me for this. I always believe that you work for yourself. You work with an organization. Mm-hmm. And why I say that is there will come times where the tide will, you know, ride you freely and things will be great. You can't miss. But then there's going to be those trying times. And I think if you put too much of your compensation into working, oh no, I work for them, you'll be inevitably disappointed. And then we lose a sense of ourselves. Relationships get broken. All the bad things happen. And we morally resign. We stay engaged, right? Because what? Once you're too far in, you say, oh, I'm too far in now. What else am I going to do? That's the worst. I mm-hmm. think when you kill the spirit, and I know I can't, this is a controversial word to use, but when you kill the spirit of a warrior, the battle's already lost.
Right.
So I think it's very important to stay true to yourself, stay true to your virtues, your morals, your integrity, and always realize the standards you set for yourself, you're in control of those. You're in control of those. You work with an organization. So you have to be malleable to the organization. Yes, but I'm saying you always apply what it is the organization expects of you with the tools that you already have in here. Right. And I think that is the key to longevity. I wish somebody had taught me that sooner, but I think a lesson learned should be a lesson shared.
Yeah. And if you're thinking about a career in law enforcement, that's some of the most sage advice you're ever going to get is right there. That was free. That's something for you to consider now before you ever apply.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, it's not a 9-to-5. It's a lifestyle.
Yeah.
That's it. So let's just get into here a couple things before you go. Your cook is called Kapikaze, a crucible to manage Mission Impossible. That came out July 21. And I apologize because typically I will get a guest book and read it before you come on the show, but I didn't realize you had a book out.
Yeah.
You can find Tom's books on tomrizzo.com on his website, or I found it on Amazon also. So support your brother there. And I just want to read this. I got this off your LinkedIn page talking about the book. This crucible is meant to provide a series of lessons as the cliche rings, if I only knew then what I've come to know now. So for officers, a candid analysis of policing's trials and tribulations while offering a guide to navigate the treacherous path which has been paved. For officers' loved ones, which this is, in my world, that's critical because I refer to our families as our unsung heroes.
Yeah.
So this is something for our unsung heroes as well. A means to acceptance, forgiveness, and acknowledgement. And for the oppositionist, the naysayer, a means to an understanding, not necessarily an agreement. So that kind of sums up his book right there in a nutshell. I love the way you worded that. Did you have a ghostwriter or did you write all this?
I wrote it.
Dang, you did pretty good there, son.
Thank you.
Well, now you got AI, so you can...
I wish I had it then.
But where can you find Tom? On Instagram, I've already told you, TomRizzo70. On TikTok, Tom070. On Facebook, Tom Rizzo. On LinkedIn, Thomas Rizzo. And his website again is www.thomasrizzo.com. Ladies and gentlemen, we are so fortunate to have you on here, Tom. I know you said some nice things about me, and I'll send you a check. I think I told you that last time, and I'd bounce that thing all the way up to New Jersey to you.
I'll come charge you. I'll charge you.
But it's, I mean, a true pleasure to have somebody on here that is so passionate about their work, who has taken a leadership role as being a public servant, who's not afraid to put themselves out there, talk about the trials and tribulations, but also the lessons that were learned from going through those trials and tribulations. So, brother, thank you, thank you, thank you. I hope that we, and I honestly mean this, I hope we have the opportunity to meet in person someday. Congratulations to you again on the National Law Enforcement Hall of Fame. Like you said, that's number 45. The thousands and thousands of cops we have in the United States, past and present, there's number 45 in the Hall of Fame. Wow. That's impressive. That just truly is. And I think that's an honor that was well-deserved. And I think they picked the right person. So, brother, thank you for your transparency, your honesty. Thank you for what you do. Like I said earlier, you represent the best of us. It's been a true honor to have you on here. So, for all our listeners, you folks, thank you very much for coming back. People like this is why I keep running the show. And I'm getting goosebumps about just talking about it because I get excited talking to it. This guy is motivational. He's inspirational, just like some of the other guests we've had on here. Maybe they're not coming out of their shells quite so much, but there's still motivation and inspiration out there. If you saw the episode with Carla Castellanos, who is the Border Patrol agent that had 4 years on the job and the guy hit the checkpoint in the Yuma sector in Arizona, put her in the hospital. She lost part of her arm below the elbow. She almost lost a leg. She and I have stayed in touch. She sent me a text message yesterday, and I'm getting goosebumps about this as well. And my wife, she edited Carla's episodes, and so she knows her history and everything that happened to her. Carla was brought back on the job in uniform as a Border Patrol agent yesterday.
Oh, that's awesome.
And like I said, we're doing this on May 2nd. So on May 1st, she went back to work. This girl had every reason in the world to say, I'm done. I can't do this. She has never said that. So you folks just inspired the crap out of me. And you listeners, you inspire me too, because you continue to come back. I know you love listening to these stories, and that's why I continue to bring them to you. But I also know the real reason. You joy every week coming back to play the biggest, the baddest, the most dangerous game of all. And what's that game? That's the game of crimes. God bless you all. We'll see you next week. Tom, thank you, brother. Be safe.
Thank you.